Welcome to Conversations in Cannabis. Today's guest is Danny Diamond, founder and CEO of California-based business-to-business trade show, Hall of Flowers. This conversation was recorded over the phone on April 7th, 2023.
Back here again to discuss the upcoming Hall of Flowers, back at the Sonoma County Fairgrounds, May 3rd and 4th. Danny, again, wonderful to see you again, brother.
First of all, great to see you again, and always like to be on your podcast. I'm not doing much of them, but you are always my favorite, so thank you.
I appreciate you, brother. I mean, you're an absolute legend in the business-to-business section in the California cannabis industry. Definitely want to talk to you about different things going on in California. Obviously, want to talk to you about the upcoming show, which is absolutely exciting. I believe you're now going into your fourth or fifth season in the Sonoma County Fairgrounds. Definitely want to talk to you about the exciting events that you're going to be having within Hall of Flowers, such as, you know, your personalized buyer scheduling program and things like that to help streamline experience. So let's just kick it off, man. Just to start on everything, next month, your flagship show is going to hit the grounds. What can we expect as a transition from people that attended, say, the last Sonoma County Fairgrounds event for Hall of Flowers?
So the new things are party. We're going to have a main event party that basically Gelato is putting it together. Lots of musicians, DJs. It's going to be across the street in the veteran building. Huge space. It'd be great. We, you know, people will have like a 2 hours between the show and the party. Clean up, dress up, and come and enjoy, the evening before the storm of the next day. So that's a big one. People are super excited about it. We had farmers section. So farmers, and then we call it farmers, a small batch. So we did basically stands, new stand that we actually bought especially for this show, be used for the first time. And it's basically introductory price for those that want to exhibit. I'm super excited about it because we used to do those things for emerging designers when I was in the fashion trade shows. And it's always draw the audience. So I think people will be really surprised, positively surprised. Then we have some, people that are coming back.
Well, I was going to say, Gelato alone. I mean, Gelato, a father-son team, absolutely an incredible story just behind them alone. Looking at, say, you know, the after party that you guys are going to be throwing at them is kind of an add-on experience. Let's start with there. What made you want to do this partnership with Gelato in the first place? I know they threw an after party that was kind of separated from you guys in an off-site mansion. It was really intimate, really a good time. What made you guys want to do something official with them?
It's a good question. I should have touched on that. So we always allow people, you know, do your thing in the evening. Kind of the more the merrier. People having after hours activities, good for everyone. The city was actually not happy about it because they did it in an Airbnb and police came and stuff like that. They, by the way, did a very nice party. It was kept clean, you know, high level, but cars are blocking the streets and stuff like that, and people are complaining, right? So the city asked, yeah, hey, there's a way for us to contain everyone. And it was like two stars aligning. We wanted to do that. Gelato wanted to actually reached out to us sometimes, say, hey, can we do something in the fairgrounds? So, okay, great. Great that you're reaching out. We were not sure about the if to do it in the fairground, but it's really across the street, an amazing venue, which is tied into the fairground. So it was perfect. Also, people feel that, you know, they're actually going to a different place than the same place that they've been during the day. So that's how it came about. And they're not the only one that's saying that, you know, we heard it from a lot of people that we need kind of, an highlighted party for the show. So it was really a win-win for everyone. Well, and there, you know the team, they are super excited. They came aggressive to the market. It's the second round. They do whatever it takes. They're on it. I mean, everything is ready.
Oh yeah, you
it's
can't
going
get
to be
much
great.
more you can't get much more legacy players than say George and Cody Sadler. I mean, these guys, I believe, started their first grow in their garage, eventually expanding that into Platinum Vapes, which then turned into PV, which they sold, and now
Exactly.
they're launching Gelato. I believe they launched Gelato at your last Hall of Flowers event, if I'm not mistaken. That was their inaugural launch, I believe.
I think the one before, I think Palm Springs was the first one.
Palm Springs. But yeah, no, I mean, absolutely incredible cannabis entrepreneurs in the space. When you're looking at, say, how to lay out, you know, something that's an after party event specifically tied in with your brand and their brand. I mean, their mansion party, as you kind of mentioned, extremely high end, very, very classy. How do you kind of make sure that you guys are matching what you need for all of your other vendors while still incorporating the Gelato mindset, since it is a co-branded party?
So first of all, Gelato was the one that actually organized A to Z. We were giving them from our production experience, and in general, what works, what doesn't work. So we kind of work on the event with them, and it was really seamless experience. For example, anywhere from who to get in, you need already the wristband for Hall of Flowers in order to get into the party, right? So that's one thing. Kind of, we did the vetting for them, if you will. Also, perhaps these people that only will be attending Hall of Flowers in day two, that don't have the wristband already. So we're gonna have a kiosk just outside of the party that you can get your wristband, and then you can already get into the party. Things like that. And we even share the same production company. So we really work on that together, although they took the lead. And I asked a few brands, are they seeing any issues with that? And no, even everyone welcomed that. They didn't feel that they're inferior or anything like that if they're not doing it. So I think it was well perceived. We also have a pre-party that's in the works with Cannon Craft.
Nice.
And then working also on a post-party, but... So I don't want to commit to anything over here until it's official.
Well, I mean, just the party of the show floor itself is incredible. I mean, Hall of Flowers is an experience to behold for anybody in the cannabis industry in California. Obviously, if you are a dispensary, make sure that you are signed up. It's free to verify and attend the event. I got to ask, you know, one of the things that you kind of bring to the show floor, which you've kind of grown over the years, is the conversations aspect, kind of the seminars going over different aspects of the industry so that industry insiders can kind of be able to share information and network. What are some things that people can expect from your conversation series at Hall of Flowers this year?
So we're actually not having the conversation this year.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
The reason is because we're introducing basically an appointment scheduling system. So, and we decided to focus on that, right? I mean, resources are limited, and we understood that that will take a lot. And we made that decision. At the end of the day, the most important thing for brands is that they see buyers, more so than the conversations. So we had during the pandemic a system, we call it Engage. We have basically online meetings, 15 minutes meeting, 5 minutes break, 15 minutes over 2 days. So we basically translated to the physical event. And basically brands, we're gonna build the profiles. They will say, you know, the category of product that they're selling. They will be able to see already all the attending stores ahead of time and basically choose those that they want to meet. And then after that, right after 420, retailers will go on and see which brands wanted to basically, meet with them. And they will go into the into the platform and say, okay, great. This brand A wants to meet with me and 10 o'clock works for me. Great. And then they will be able to build a schedule. It's interesting because we ran a survey before. Obviously, brands will always welcome that, right? Obviously, right? They want to meet them as many buyers as possible. And buyers, on the other hand, interestingly, don't want us to set a schedule for them. So although we explain that, look, you decide who you want to meet, we just want to organize it for you in a flow. So we may have not asked the question the right way or whatnot, but it was like the consensus, do not build a schedule for us. So we came up with this that basically, and it's kind of innovative because at least with the company that we work, no one asked for that before. One side, which is the brand saying, I want to meet. The other side goes and says, okay, you have availability at 10:40, 11:40, 2 p.m. I'll take that. So it gives freedom to the buyers to build their own schedule. And the brands are basically in, there in the booth. They are ready to meet. So we also looking to maybe raffle something for the buyers that attended the most meetings. I would also say that we have those NFC wristbands. So if buyer allows you, you'll be able to tap with your phone and basically they get their credentials. And then we're trying to even merge the two systems, and like that, we see who actually been in the meeting.
I was gonna say, data is king, and I mean that sounds absolutely incredible. The ability for people to kind of swap information. I know the old school adage was swapping business cards, which then transitioned into the QR code. But no, doing NFC, just tapping it, kind of like you're at Disney World with your little magic band, just going right by one after another and getting people's contact information. That seems to be the future to me. When you guys were deciding kind of how to roll out this system for your buyers, you mentioned that there had been some pushback as far as like, hey, I don't want to necessarily have a schedule set. But there's no minimum requirement. I mean, if there's one brand that you absolutely have to meet, you'll be able to set just that one schedule and then just browse around to the brand you don't know.
Exactly. And if that brand didn't necessarily ask to meet with you, then you can still make a request. If the brand asks to meet with you, then you basically see their calendar and pick up a time. So it's really, it's a great flexible system. By the way, touching back on the NFC, exhibitor also wants, attendees to have lanyards, to see their name, the store, and like you said, QR code that they can scan. The retailers, on the other hand, want to rather not to be exposed, right? And also, who wants to wear a lanyard, really, right? So the compromise was to do it on within basically NFC wristbands. So someone come to the booth, you can basically scan. I mean, it's common, there's those lead retrieval equipment, but it's we think that this will be a new innovative solution. I spoke with some folks in the trade show business. I heard the both opinions will make sure to that buyers understand that, hey, you don't want to give you information, just do not let people scan your wristband. It's that simple.
I mean, it makes perfect sense to me. I know there's, specific buyers from, say, the hottest brands in California don't want to be harassed as they walk around with a giant lanyard. So it definitely makes sense. But the ability to transact that information in a clean and seamless way and then be able to capture that data, confirming, hey, I met with this guy, it seems absolutely innovative to me. And the fact that you guys are going to be first to roll this out, because I don't believe I've heard of anybody else doing it with NFC. Like I said, I believe most people are still doing it with QR codes. So, if this taps up, I think you might have a winning ticket on your hands. What are some aspects in some big name, say, innovations in the industry that you believe people should be looking out for when they hit the show floor at Hall of Flowers?
I would say on a product level, when we were looking at the categories of, that's also part of the system, right? So you will show as a brand, you'll show I have this and that product, right? The specific categories. For example, in concentrate, when we asked few retailers to look at the products categories, you say you have to have diamonds. So diamonds will be a concentrate that people are in the look for. And there's probably some scarcity of this. Like we heard it from few retailers. Oh, you know, if you have diamonds there, this will be something that we're looking for. This is the kind of the one basically new thing that I heard that people are in the lookout for. Other than that, you know, with this economy, I'm not surprised that there's not too much innovation. People right now are looking to stay afloat, right? And with that, innovation goes down, and it's not just in cannabis, and it's any industry. I mean, just look at the layoffs in the tech. It's mostly, you know, the things that they're going to develop for the future, and it's not the people that are working on the current business, right?
Right. And I mean, there's definitely been a constriction, not just in the economy, but definitely in the Californian cannabis industry and cannabis industry as a whole. When you're looking kind of at the, you know, micro level of the industry specific to California, considering the amount of people that you know and do business with in the state, what do you believe is the one thing that is most on brands' minds right now in the industry? Is it, say, you know, making sure that you're staying relevant by expanding your product category, but not expanding your employee base? Because I've noticed that there's been a lot of kind of players expanding their categorical approach to the industry versus, say, staying in their lane and trying to see where they can make money. I'm just trying to see from your perspective, since you deal with so many people, kind of what you're hearing from the brand perspective is how people are kind of weathering the storm, so to speak.
So look, expanding all your categories, that's been around for at least a year and a half, you know. Yeah, even more maybe. Halfway through the pandemic, you'll see brands are going all across the board. I think people are trying to figure out how to be more efficient. I'm hearing about companies that saying, hey, why do we have sales teams separate and they are field marketing? Maybe we can do both. Right now, there is also a case where, you know, stores are not paying the bills or behind on the bills. So the salespeople are also boots on the ground and going and doing some collection along with that, right? I'm hearing people that investors are getting stressed and they want to see some return on investment. So even if they're not losing money, you know, they actually need to show how they're making money and maybe share that with some investors. So honestly, that's the consensus right now, how to be more efficient.
Well, and when you're looking at, say, the events business model in California, you had announced that you guys were canceling your Palm Springs event and focusing solely on your Northern California event in Santa Rosa. I know you still have your Toronto event. Was the Palm Springs decision kind of related to making sure you're streamlining your business practice, or was it, or what was the decision behind that?
So yeah, it's you know, listening to the market. I mean, there are exhibitors that want to come in a big way, but they don't want to do it twice a year. So you know, they will end up deciding to stay on the sideline. But once you doing it once a year, it's a lot easier to digest, right? So some people, as a result, decided to do it now that we announced it's once a year. And some people, it was just too late for them by the time we made the announcement. But I think we're going to see the benefits of that next year, because we're already going to be once a year. I mean, it's interesting. Some brands will actually prefer to do exhibit consistently, but exhibit in a kind of smaller way, if you will. So the expenses that they have for two shows are maybe similar to ones that have it for once a year. But some of those, you know, they're rather staying, riding, doing it big and doing it once a year. So that's what the decision now.
Well, looking at Toronto, I know you had been, you know, the last time we talked, you were absolutely pleasantly surprised with how Toronto turned out. I know you said that you were worried. I believe you said you were worried literally up until opening day, the day or the night before. But it crushed it in Toronto. Are you planning on expanding upon that show and only keeping the streamlining on the California side while you look at new markets? Or what's the business model outside of California look like?
So, okay, we're going to have Toronto in September, 19th, 20th. And yeah, the show is going to be bigger than last year. And it's going to be, you know, it's not going to be a huge show. Like I said, all markets are hurting now, including Canada. But it's going to be, nevertheless, going to be a great show. It's probably going to be slightly smaller than Santa Rosa, but it's going to be bigger than the last show. And in the last show, we had about 70 exhibitors, and I'm expecting to have 120 to 140 exhibitors this time. Other than that, you know, we have our eyes on the East Coast. It's just New York in particular, just the market is not ready over there. I mean, the most event that I ever produced were in New York City. I know every single space over there.
Very, very pricey, but they do have a very interesting social consumption law over there. And, you know, versus California, the ability to treat it like tobacco. Would that be a huge consideration for you to make that your first leap, is the fact that consumption is so open over there?
I would say that potentially this makes it easier, right? But it depends. So also in Canada, you can consume anywhere. But in that case, you don't need to have any rules for events. So what is easier? There's black and white rules, you actually know what you can do. But if no black and white rules, you leave it to interpretations of others, and everyone has their own interpretation. So, you know, venue by venue, jurisdiction by jurisdiction. In California as well, there's issues of what's considered private event. People, you know, doing private event, and therefore they believe that they don't need to adhere to any regulations. Also a gray area, I would say.
Do you think, and that's something I actually want to ask you about too, because I've noticed it with a lot of events that have been going on, is there's, you know, even with MJ, MJ Unpacked, like having these kind of side little events that are considered to be private events that are usurping, so to speak, on the buyers from that main event. Is that a problem that you're also seeing? Do you guys see that as a problem?
I mean, look, it happens in many industries. I was a disruptor once in my life. Wasn't the leader and was a disruptor, sure. But my philosophy is, as long as it's a complimentary event, such as the party, you know, it's a win-win for everyone.
Looking at the overall totality, I know we had mentioned kind of a little bit of constriction in the industry, but there's definitely been a lot more retailers as California has tried to kind of fix the problem of having a lot of capping on the world's largest adult use recreational market. How does the buyer attendance look from year to year? I mean, you're obviously growing the brands, but you know, from a ratio perspective, like how good is the attendance on the buyers? Are you seeing that capitalization come in as the new licenses are getting issued?
Yeah, so look, first and foremost, we need to deliver our buyers. Experience is great and everything, but as long as the buyers are there, we have the right to exist. And, you know, I have a team of three that are dedicated to that. And, you know, we analyze after every event, any new licenses that we issue. We're doing the research, or is there an open store behind it, about to be open, and so on. And with the economy and everything, thank God, buyers are super excited. So far we're tracking better than the last two events. We had about 1,050 represented about over 600 accounts. So for us, a chain of store would be one account, but also a single moms and pop store would be one account, right? And we, you know, we have in our database existing accounts, new accounts, many new licenses with new stores around it. So we know that when we reach out to them, they may or may not be aware of Hollow Flowers, right? So it's a different conversation. We are tracking those that told us last year that they would be open, but now checking, are you open or not? Working that super diligently. And so far, we have over 60% of the stores.
Nice.
Those accounts already, not the stores, over 60% of the accounts. So, and mostly the big ones, all of them are coming to change. So it's probably already over 70% of the store registered. And it's really exciting because thank God buyers are excited. So,
well, one thing I want to ask you about that, you know, kind of as an expansion, obviously, social use coming online and being more and more prolific in the California cannabis market is driving, obviously, buyers' decisions in how they want to stock their stores. An on-site consumption experience might be different than, say, what somebody wants to do at an at-home experience or maybe at a party. Are you seeing kind of a draw for retailers to make sure that they have, say, more buyers and more buyers' eyes at a show in particular, just to make sure that they're covering all their bases versus the, say, original Hall Flowers, where at that time prior to social use, it may have made more sense to only send a manager? Are you seeing kind of an expansion of store attendance from the social use lounges?
I'll be frank, I did not separately track the social use. I'll be happy to look into it and get back to you. But if you're asking in general, right, attendance of store manager versus owner versus you know, inventory manager, I definitely see more trends toward like actually defining what's the buyer's role. You know, in the beginning of the recreational market, you've seen a lot more inventory manager. To me, inventory manager, someone that might just make sure that the inventory comes in, the inventory is being sold, and you know, looking at the issue when it's not. And actually now it's buyers, people that are looking at assortment, people that are coming to explore new products, right? So there is more and more sophistication.
Do you expect to see kind of an expansion on that as things get more granular? Say, for instance, the larger retailers saying, hey, I have specifically a concentrates buyer that is the most knowledgeable person on concentrates, but maybe he's not a flower guy. And I have a flower, but like, are you seeing more of a diversification, or are you seeing kind of a one catch-all independent buyer for most of the chains? What do you see as kind of?
I've seen it both ways. I've seen it even with kind of chains that were already had their specialties actually cutting down on that due to the economy. And I've seen see people that are expanding. So it goes both ways. Hard to say. There's also stories, you know, that the owner was the buyer. So sure, maybe there was the inventory manager that just managed inventory, but now, you know, some of them perhaps are not coming and actually sending an actual buyer. But, oh boy, I cannot wait to get into the CRM and analyze some of the questions you just had. So,
well, like I said, I mean, to me, I am 1000% happy to see people getting more sophisticated with their purchasing decisions instead of just going as a one-all catch-all. And I am absolutely stoked to see and hear that lounges are becoming more prevalent and that people are starting to kind of incorporate that into their purchasing decisions. I just remembered the one state that you had been hyper excited about, and I believe it's because of your time in apparel, was Florida. In especially South Florida, do you believe that if you had to take a guess, and obviously nobody has a crystal ball, but if you had to take a guess, would you rather do an event in New York City where you have those, you know, consumption laws and stuff like that, but have to pay a premium on the price of the real estate? Or would you rather do a South Florida during an adult use, you know, regulatory environment? In a place that you feel would be the economic driver for the new age of cannabis?
Well, look, first of all, we have an an issue of crossing the state board lines, right? So if that was not an issue, I think South Beach, Florida is a very exciting place. Now, given the regulations, you need to do it state by state.
Yeah, that's true. Except maybe on the genetic side, do you think that might be an avenue, say, worth exploring, or is genetics not necessarily worth the time?
That's something definitely worth exploring. That's actually something that I'm working on, and I would say that genetics can break state lines.
Yeah.
So basically, transporting seeds from point A to point B around the country is something that the federal government is okay with, which then makes it legitimate to break state lines.
So you're already looking into that space
in a different angle. Yes, but I am looking.
Okay. Well, I don't want to get you to reveal anything you're not ready to reveal yet, but I am excited that you're definitely working in the genetic space, because I personally feel that is the new forefront. Now that terpenes are kind of on the front of everybody's minds, people looking for the latest exotic flavors is kind of the new thing. So looking forward and ahead, May 3rd and May 4th, obviously May 3rd, the Buyers and Retailers Day, May 2nd, Bud Tenders Day. What can people expect coming in from one day to the next if they haven't attended a Hall of Flowers event before?
You can expect to see the same, okay? And why not, right? Day one, we're basically saying, hey, buyers, focus on buying. Also, in general, in events, everyone wants to be, for some reason, day one, no matter what day of the week it is. I've seen it all, right? It's also helping us say, hey, you know, we want those days to be focused, right? We have a limited amount of industry tickets. We'll tell those folks, come the second day. You know, let the people stay focused on buyers. And then, by the way, buyers are also coming day two. I'll say about 70% of them at least will come also for the second day, right? And along with that, bartenders. And it's a really exciting initiative. Even I cannot believe how excited stores are. Also, to be able to send bartenders, right? So,
and they're your tastemakers. They're your first point of contact for your consumer, 100%.
Yes. So, be interesting to see now. You know, we kind of launched our program last time, was the first time. So, now that it's the second time and there's more awareness, be interesting to see if brands will do something different for day one versus day two. Hey, day two versus day one for those bartenders. Remain to be surprised and remain to be seen. More outdoor activation, by the way. So interestingly, when you look at the data, we had the same amount of buyers in the last Palm Springs show and in the Santa Rosa show. Yet people were saying that it was lighter, and I'm like, why is it lighter? The number don't show that. And then you realize there is less outdoor activations. So we made sure this time that we pushed first the outdoor activation, and they were sold out like over a month ago, right? So this is something that you'll see more outdoor activation this time than the last Santa Rosa event. And yeah, there's some, you know, surprising activations that some brands are doing. I don't want to reveal it. I haven't asked them if that's okay, but.
Well, let's just say you got to be there in order to see it. Make sure, again, that you're signed up and that you are in attendance. If you are a buyer for a retail dispensary or a bud tender, manager or owner in the California cannabis market. One other thing I do want to ask you about before I let you go, because I know I don't have too much time with you, and I do appreciate the time that you do give. Just to put a nice button on everything and to kind of look at the year ahead for yourself and for the Hall of Flowers brand, we have the main flagship event coming up in just a little under a month, May 3rd and 4th. And then I believe with your Palm Springs event canceled, you now have the Toronto event. Is there anything else for the Hall of Flowers brand?
You know, I'm like now laying low and focusing on those two events. Not sure enough we'll have anything else this year. And like everyone else, you know, it's time to maintain the current, you know, stay within budget and look for what the future lays ahead. I would say though, so yes, we are focusing on those two events and we have our hands full.
We would like to thank Danny for his time and being on today's episode. Find out more about Hall of Flowers by visiting them online at www.hallofflowers.com. That'll do it for us this week. Make sure to stay tuned to the next episode here on Conversations in Cannabis.